Hey, it's another episode here of Walking the Field. Me and Alex Crow, Jerry Hopkins, your other co-host, because you can't forget my name. I'm more important. Here to talk to you about some college basketball before the holidays. Yes, Alex is already laughing. I don't know if you can hear him. But, well, yes, you will, because I'll edit it if I want to hear it or not. Depends if he says something mean to me. So, we're here with another episode. I want to get straight into it. We've missed some college basketball stuff. We need to get right on into it. We're going to do basically the same way we did last episode, but we're going to be a little more concise, right? We're going to do five things that surprise us because college basketball is the most surprising sport out there. Three teams to watch these upcoming weeks into the holidays, and some ranked versus ranked games like we did last time. I'm just going to start straight out here. Well, wait, what am I doing? Why am I telling myself to just go straight through it? Alex, how are you doing?
I am doing wonderful. As I mentioned, one of the reasons that we were laughing before we started recording is because I played a strong four games of bowling last night, and because I am out of shape, I'm very sore. I woke up hurting this morning. I woke up the opposite of feeling dangerous. But I've managed to put my notes together. Luckily, I can do this podcast sitting in a chair, relaxing, because yeah, it was a tough night.
Yes, the two most athletic hosts with the most. Just kidding. We're the exact opposite. We don't know what we're talking about. Well, Alex might think he does. I know I don't. So I'm going to get straight into it. The first thing I want to talk about, the first thing that surprised, I think, everybody, I don't feel like I'm any different, right, is what is going on at Kentucky. Kentucky right now is 1-5, and this is their worst start since 1926. Cameron Fletcher, who played 2 minutes in Kentucky's loss to North Carolina, was not pleased with it, had a very visible scene in the game on the bench about it. Sometime later, I think about 2 or 3 days later, he was asked to step away by the team from Coach Calipari. I have a bunch of thoughts on this, but I'm going to limit it to three. Okay, the one thing is that this team overall, this is still really early, it's a young team. This is a running trend, and we're seeing struggles with teams that are younger, that are not super old. This is not just a Kentucky problem, right? Teams that have freshmen or just guys that are stepping into those roles, some of them have succeeded. You can look at like guys like Jalen Suggs, who I'm just super high on. And there's, you know, some guys who are struggling. This is not perfect. This is not a perfect science. And when you have less time to prepare, especially for a new team, challenges are expected to happen. So this is not super surprising. But what we're seeing now, and Kentucky's becoming like the extreme example of this, in my opinion, is the worst of what the one-and-done system can do. Because this is a fragile relationship between coach and player in the first place. Calipari gets these kids who are really arguably the most talented kids in the nation, or at least the most talented kids, right, in their class. But arguably some of the most talented kids in college basketball. He's not alone. A lot of the people who do the one and done, especially Calipari, especially Coach K, like these guys are getting people who can play right now. They're almost one of the terms, rent-a-players, and rightfully so. And if you're going to get a bunch of these guys who are 5-star kids or very high 4-star kids, very, very talented players, all of them have to sacrifice more because they're that much more talented. Right now, some of those kids who are on Kentucky's starting five could walk into other programs and be the guy at smaller schools or even some schools maybe in the SEC. But I'm not going to go that far. I'm not going to go crazy. But these are some of the best kids in the country for a reason. They sacrifice more, which they're not used to. And you sacrifice this for two things. If you are a freshman trying to go to the league, is your draft stock and that you win. You go to Kentucky to win. More than like some, and of course you go anywhere to win, but especially some of these bigger name programs, because you know the expectation is you're going to win and you're going to do your job and be successful, be in the Final Four. You're competing for a championship to prove why you should be in the NBA. When you start losing, that goes, because not all these kids are trying to take a 4-year stop. Not all these kids are trying to get their degree. Basketball has a 1-year limit for a reason, at least the NBA does. So it's not like you're bringing a football kid in who, really, you have a chance of more chances of keeping a junior going to a senior than you do a freshman to a sophomore. Like, why not skip out on the money is where a lot of these guys are heads at. So when you start losing this really fragile balance of you need to win to keep this going, it's starting to break, and we're seeing the worst of it. I'm not asking for Calipari's. I'm not saying like, oh my God, take it all out. But we're seeing some of the ugly parts of what can happen if the one and done system starts to struggle. I feel bad for Fletcher in one sense, and I don't in the other. He was pissed, and it's not professional, but this is what happens when you're a 19-year-old in college. Me and Alex, we're not like, you know, some crazy kids, but I'm 20 years old. I will do something stupid that I will regret 3 years down the line. I just don't have a public presence to do that. Alex will probably do it too. Granted, Alex is a great child, right? But like, we do things that we regret. Like, you know, this is gonna happen. So for him to do that, it's frustrating, but it's a learning experience. This is a 19-year-old, 20-year-old kid. You know, but on the other hand, it is unprofessional. And you walk into that spotlight in Kentucky, this is what's gonna happen. Everything you do, good or bad, will be talked about. That's why you go to these places. I know Calipari is a good coach, and I'll end up here. I know he's going to figure it out in some sense. But while this kid made a mistake, and we shouldn't just dump on him for making a mistake, we have to realize that this is a balance. You are in a national spotlight as a 19-year-old. Every mistake you're going to make is tough, and every mistake you're going to see is scrutinized. A lot's going on at Michigan. I mean, you can say about their football team, but a lot's going on in Kentucky right now. I'm not going to just quit on them, though. This is a guy who knows what he's doing, or else he wouldn't be at this program and been this successful for this long. But he has some work to do, and I think, innocently to one of Alex's points too, or one of my points as well, the SEC is kind of open now, and that's weird. Alex, what was the first thing that surprised you want to talk about?
Well, I mean, first, just going with Kentucky, I mean, I see just a lot of problems with Kentucky just in general. They're turning the ball over nearly 17 times a game, which for a team that has really struggled to score as they have, that is not something that they can even remotely afford. They've been really good on defense. I mean, that's one thing that you have to give credit to Kentucky for, is that they're only allowing 67 points a game, roughly. But they're only scoring 65, so it's not a favorable balance in that sense. And as far as Cameron Fletcher, I really understand like what he's kind of going through. Not that I was in any kind of a good basketball, but I mean, I've sat on the bench and not gotten to play when my high school team won 3 games in a season, and I'm not getting to, you know. So I get it. I mean, he's thinking, hey, maybe I can make a difference. He's playing 8 minutes a game. Right. And I'm looking at guys ahead of them as far as minutes go, and they're not producing. Right. So I think that I don't like the way he did it necessarily. And again, it's everything's public with Kentucky, so of course everyone saw it. But I understand like the logic behind it. And I understand like him wanting to play, because again, 8.7 minutes per game is what he's getting. He's shooting, 54%, which is nearly tops on the team. The only guys shooting at a higher percentage than him are Olivier Assar, who does not shoot outside the paint, and Lance Ware, who's playing about as many minutes as Fletcher is. I think that, there's a valid question, because, I mean, you look at the three-point per shooting percentages just in total. The team cannot shoot the three. I mean, they're shooting 24%. That's even beneath, what teams like Texas A&M were shooting last year, bottom of the SEC in three-point percentage. So, I mean, I think that it's valid. But again, you can't do it like that. But it wouldn't surprise me if when he comes back, especially if Kentucky continues to lose, I mean, at some point you have to shake something up, because the core of Brandon Boston, Clarence, Terrence Clark, Olivier Assar, Davion Mintz, and then either Isaiah Jackson or Devin Askew, they've kind of flip-flopped those two guys as far as the starting lineup goes. It's not sustainable the way that they're playing right now. They turn the ball over a lot. They are abysmal shooting the three. The only player on the team that's made more than one three-pointer that's shooting above 30% is Devin Askew at 36%. Some of that you feel like it's got to regress towards the mean. Right now you've got Davion Mintz, transfer originally from Creighton. He's only shooting 28% from the three-point line. He's never had a season. He never had a season at Creighton in which he shot less than 34%. So you want to say that they're gonna start finding it a little bit. But this Kentucky team, they've got a lot to work out. But again, kind of like you led into, and this is kind of my first point. Is the fact that the SEC is pretty wide open. The SEC has not been good this season. There's a lot of teams. You know, if you look at the standings, you're going to say, well, there's a lot of teams. There's Georgia's 7-0. You got teams like that. Arkansas also 7-0. But you look at who they're playing. They're playing, the Rogers High School JV. They're playing a bunch of high school teams, essentially. They don't have good wins. And when these teams have played good competition, such as Auburn, LSU, Ole Miss, that all have one loss, when they've played the one even remotely good team they've played, they've been beaten by. And I think that just to kind of lead into a little bit of a second point as well, is not only for the SEC, but there's a lot of teams that just due to the coronavirus, have had to shift their schedule around and have played some powder puff teams. And it makes me wonder, how these teams are going to play in conference, because you know conference play is starting. It's already started in places like the Big Ten and conferences like that, and it's going to get rolling, especially after New Year's in January. But it just begs the question is how these teams are going to play, because you've got some teams that have not taken the easy road. You know, you've got Gonzaga. They've played every ranked team that's been willing to play them, essentially, and they would have played even more, but they had a couple of games get canceled. You know, you see Iowa. They've taken kind of the same approach. Baylor has tried to play some big game teams. And you know, even Michigan State, they've played a couple of ranked teams already as well. You know, and you contrast that, and I think it's going to set these teams up better down the stretch, because they're already a little bit more battle test. This isn't going to be like the year that Wichita State, you know, went undefeated and then gets bounced by an 8-seed Kentucky team in the second round, just because Kentucky was the 8-seed, but they played in the SEC and, you know, had a really good team. Wichita State, you know, playing at that time, I believe in the Ohio Valley Conference, if I'm not mistaken, or either the Ohio Valley or Missouri Valley. I don't remember which one, but you know, they ran through it because they were by far the best team. And then, you know, they get bounced in the second round after being undefeated. So it'll be interesting to see how these teams adjust. But the good thing, again, just circling back to Kentucky, the good thing for Kentucky is that they haven't really played any SEC games as of yet. Their SEC opener, actually, I believe, has been postponed. It was supposed to be against South Carolina. So they're not playing an SEC game until January 2nd against Mississippi State. And they've got two nice games to get their feet wet under them. Playing Mississippi State and Kentucky and Vanderbilt to start the season.
Yeah, and I love the point that you made about like teams who've actually gone out and had a chance to play some real teams, because it has actually led us to something that I thought could have been a little different, but why am I surprised? I shouldn't have been. While everything has changed this year, college basketball really hasn't. And that includes upsets. Michigan State losing to Northwestern, St. Louis losing to Minnesota, Southern Illinois beats Butler. They're an undefeated team. Good team to look out for if you like those little smaller teams, right? Florida State loses to UCF. Like, this is why we love college basketball. I know this is a very simple point, right? Like, oh my God, how did this surprise you? Well, this year, like you said, some teams, like especially in the SEC, have been kind of playing below their means, not necessarily because they're trying to puff it up their schedule, but they want games. Guys, people want to play games because practices are a premium. Sometimes it feels like, why go practice once a week if I could play once a week? I would have that mentality if I'm a head coach. So some programs who have led themselves out to play more games and more competition outside of their conference especially, yeah, we've had our upsets. That's on the beauty of college basketball. That's what keeps you coming around, right? So even though everything feels like it's all over the place, people are still getting upset. That's my second point, Alex. I know you kind of said too. What are you feeling? What do you want to talk about next?
Yeah, I mean, we can just talk again, because we always put together a couple of points to talk about. And being that I've already talked about kind of the SEC and the implications of playing a powder puff schedule, just two things I think, again, that kind of lend themselves to each other is, you know, one thing that I've been impressed by is that despite graduating a lot of talent, the Big East has been really, really good this year. You've got a bunch of solid teams in the top half with Villanova, Xavier, Creighton, Providence. You know, all those teams. As a matter of fact, Xavier and Creighton played today, and Creighton actually knocked off the X-Men 66-61. But it was a really good game. Neither team really had it going offensively, so you really saw some grit out of those teams. But, I mean, you've got a nice upper echelon of the Big East. But then even, like, the bad teams in the Big East, that's just kind of how I put it in the notes. Even the bad teams in the Big East really have some upset potential, because you've got teams like St. John's, who's currently 1-3 in the Big East, but I've seen them score nearly 100 points about four games this season. You've got a team like Connecticut, which already has a nice win over USC, and even a team like Butler. They're 1-3 right now, but Butler has historically been, especially the last decade or so, they've been a really good team. And so it's not a team that, you know, because they're so well coached, not a team that I would count out. You know, because they've played Villanova pretty decently close. They played Indiana pretty close as well at the beginning of the season. And what's been most impressive to me is how well Seton Hall and Marquette have weathered the departure of most, if not all, of their scoring with the draft this year.
Hey, the Big East is a basketball conference, so we've known that forever. I'm really just glad the Big East somewhat exists, even if it's on its complete form, right? Like, missing the Big East really hurt, I think, just college sports in general, especially basketball. This is a basketball conference. I'm really happy that it's living up to its standards. You talked a bit about the weakness of the SEC. We've talked about Kentucky. I know this feels like we're basically talking about an SEC podcast. I promise we'll move away from that a little bit. But I wanted to make one point, kind of off of Kentucky, kind of off of your weakness of the SEC in general. There's one team that could be a big winner in this, and that is Tennessee. This is a golden opportunity, but one that can be very quickly gone if they don't play it right. Kentucky, like I said, is not steering the ship. They're 1-5. They're not winning games. They don't look good. Tennessee has a real chance of winning and taking the SEC for good. This starts with Rick Barnes, who's been holding down the fort as their head coach for 5 years. On the court, John Fulkerson, a 6'9 forward, has the ability to get a double-double every game for him. He's not even doing it all the time he did in their last game. He did it in the game that I think that's mattered most to him, and that's been playing against Cincinnati and the Bearcats. Put up a double-double. I think it was like 15 points, 10 boards. But this is a deep team that doesn't have a superstar. I kind of look at them like the Nuggets right now of college basketball, where, and you could say Jamal Murray and Jokic are superstars, but let's just keep that one out. Say that these are all very good players, that you don't have one guy that completely dominates the game as much as other teams. But they have a lot of good guys. A perfect example of this is their guard, Yves Pons. He leads the team in rebounds. And they have about four or five guys, I think, that are scoring around 8 points. Let's see. Eight guys average 5 points or more. And that's three guys over 10 points per game. This is a balanced team. This is somebody that it feels like almost at any night, one guy could take over. An example of that was Jaden Springer in their last game. If he can become more comfortable and keep playing around, because they have a couple seniors too, so Jaden Springer doesn't have to be the super-duper star. He doesn't have to fix a problem. He's more a spark plug, and he could be a spark plug, which I think is a really good role for him. If he could keep growing this season, he could be one of those guys, I think, that takes Tennessee over the top. And like I said, this team has some talent. They have some veteran guys and some young people in the middle. And with Kentucky in disarray, they are going to have to show, and this is a perfect opportunity for them to do it, with their next game being, or one of their first SEC game being at Mizzou Arena, with a Mizzou team that can't shoot, but will really defend their butt off, and they will play hard till the whistle. We can look at the Mizzou's Bradley game, which was a disgusting, disgusting basketball game. But what it came down to is both teams defended real well. And this is a Mizzou team that and you could probably agree with me on this, Alex, right? Last year, Mizzou wouldn't have won this game.
Oh, no.
And I think that's a difference in this team. There's a lot more veteran presence. They're just kind of figuring it out. You feel like there's – I don't want to say I'm confident, right? But there's – I have a weird sense of, they could do it. And I haven't had that sense with the Mizzou team recently for a while. So with the SEC in somewhat of a disarray and kind of weak, this is a perfect chance for Tennessee to really grow and keep growing, because they've been doing it the last couple of years. I like where the Volunteers can go with this, and – what they show against Mizzou will be a very important indicator, I think, of what the SEC will look like. And I think it's even that more important because the window, we don't know how open this window is. I get it. Kentucky's in disarray. They're turning the ball over. They're young. But this has been the king for a long time for a reason. They're not going to hand over the throne easily, right? And you can only prey on dismay and problems for so long. This is not Auburn football. Right, this isn't when the bad gets bad, it gets ugly and ugly. Calipari's got rings. I respect him a lot as a coach. I respect his talent a lot. I think the mistakes will figure themselves out sooner or later. But how soon is the question, right? And if Tennessee could take advantage of that, it's going to be really interesting. I just think there's a change of guard at the moment, at least for 1 year. I want to see if it'll happen.
Yeah, and I agree. I think that right now, Tennessee, because again, you want to figure and give Kentucky kind of the benefit of the doubt and say they're going to get it figured out, because I'm sure that they're going to be better at the end of the season than they are right now. And so right now, and you kind of put it in the notes, didn't really mention it, but one thing that I really liked is that you said, you know, they've got an opportunity, you know, they need to start strong in the SEC out of the gate and go ahead and build up a lead on Kentucky. Because again, Kentucky being 1-5 right now, you're thinking they're probably going to drop at least a game or two early in the SEC schedule. And if they can get two games up on Kentucky, that positions Tennessee to finish higher in the standings. Although Tennessee does have a tougher first matchup, at least, than Kentucky does with playing Mizzou. And I guess we can go ahead and just kind of talk about that game a little bit, since we've already kind of alluded to it, because that game will be on December 30th at Mizzou Arena. My only concern with Tennessee, defensively, they have been incredibly good. They have not given up more than 66 points in a game. And in the game they gave up 66 points, they scored 102. So, you know, I understand the defense getting a little bit, a little bit relaxed in that, no doubt playing some guys that don't get to play that often. That was in St. Joe's in their most recent game, not kind of the game they're currently leading 77-59 right now over SC Upstate. But in that St. Joseph's game, I mean, they put 102 points on the board and they put 103 on Tennessee Tech. But when they've played teams that are getting closer to kind of their caliber, at least of talent, they have struggled on offense. And it's really been because of a lack of a go-to guy. It's very nice that they can spread out. But at the end of the game, I think that they are going to get bitten. I'm not sure if it'll be against Mizzou, but I think that at some points during the season, in the games they lose, it's going to be because they do not have a guy who can just get you a bucket every single time. You know, there is no Miles Powell. There is no Marcus Howard. There's no guy that you can look to and say, okay, no matter what, this guy, I know we can get him the ball, and he's at least going to give us a good look. Tennessee's offense has not been amazing, but their defense has made up for it. We've seen defensive teams do really well, like Virginia when they won. But Virginia won that year, and the reason they didn't get upset in the first round like they did the previous year to UMBC was because they had a much better offense. I'd like to see more out of Tennessee's offense. I doubt that we will see it versus a Missouri team that is very similar. Not a hugely scoring team, but just a scrappy, gritty team that's going to try and grind you out. They're going to play hard for the entire 40 minutes, and they've really been making their money on defense so far. Matchup of undefeated teams in the SEC, and it's going to be a fun one. I think that this game, whoever wins this game on December 30th, that's kind of going to determine who takes the early lead in the SEC standings. You know, who gets that 1-0 and who positions themselves to, you know, if they keep winning, to have success and position themselves nicely in the conference tournament. And even look, you know, we're already looking towards March Madness as well, because we're going to have it this year. It's going to be great. And Missouri is a team that nobody really saw coming. And they're up to, I believe, a 5 seed in Joe Lunardi's latest bracket. Tennessee a little bit higher than that, obviously, with having the 8th overall ranking. But this will have a big implicator in seeing kind of the power rankings of the SEC, because I've seen analysts go back and forth on whether they think that Tennessee or Missouri is number one. And in this next game for both of these teams, we're going to be able to see it.
Yeah, and like, yeah, the Missouri non-hype was to, I think, everyone else's dismay, right? Like, I'm not going to sit here and act like a prophet. Like, I knew Mizzou was going to be the best team in the country. No, I'm not going to, you know, pull this out. But this is a team that I think the pieces were always there, right? Like, Drew Smith was still a very good player even when they were losing. Xavier Pinson was still finding ways to get buckets, right? They were just hurt. They didn't work well, and they didn't get time together. And part of this year has been helping, right? Our veteran teams have played together. This has been a core that's kind of worked around for a year or two. This is not a fresh upstart team. On the other side of the ball, I think with Tennessee, right, you're absolutely right. They don't have a go-to guy, and it's going to hurt them down the stretch. I'm very interested in Jaden Springer. This is a dude who I think could, I want to say it could be Marcus Howard, right, or Miles Powell. But I think it could be the dude who could get you the bucket when they need one. Because he showed it a little bit against Tennessee Tech. Granted, that's Tennessee Tech, right? But he has the ability to score, and he's one of those younger guys and is a little more unknown. I think that's a benefit and, you know, a plus and a minus being a little unknown, especially earlier in the season, right? He has the ability to do it. Will he do it immediately is a different question. But yeah, that's going to be very good. And it's an SEC opener for both teams to start this hot. And like you said, I think that could be the SEC preview for who's going to run the table. And the fact that Kentucky's not in it is weird. It's 2020 for a reason, right? Another point that surprised me, my fourth point at least, and I don't know if you got your two in, Alex, so if you have to do two, please do. My fourth one, I think this is pretty obvious. We talked about both teams last time. Iowa versus Gonzaga lived up to the hype. It was a great game by both teams. Even the loser had a great game, which was Iowa. Luke Garza put up 30 points and 10 rebounds in a loss. Jalen Suggs put up 27. Both of those guys had a monstrous games, right? And there are two factors that helped Gonzaga win this game, looking back at it, right? One was three-point shooting. Iowa went 4 for 22. Gonzaga, on the other hand, 13 for 26. And rebounds. Iowa, 37. Gonzaga, 49 boards. And this is why I love, and I think this game lives up to the hype, because it came down to little things. It came down to who's hitting your shots when it matters the most and who's getting those extra boards. I guarantee you over half those boards were chippy, fight, you have to be annoying, and Gonzaga's more annoying, right? These are two teams that are pretty evenly matched. I don't want to say even just talent-wise, but two teams that have a really good niche, know what they're doing, two superstars right now in the college basketball sphere, both had great games, and it came down to little things. That is how you could tell. I think both these teams are very good. Yes, Gonzaga lived up to their number one ranking again, but Iowa showed that they're not pushed around, and obviously I don't think they have at all, but that they're a really good team. Iowa proved that again, and they're, you know, even if Iowa moves down a little bit in the rankings, this is a good team, and the Big Ten is benefiting from having a lot of good teams. And that game lived up to everything. I love when games come down to little things, because that's, you could tell, both these teams are pretty evenly matched. I love looking back at it, watching it a little bit. That was super fun. I hope we have more games just like that. Alex, I think you have like maybe one or two points to make. I'm sorry if I didn't let you make them.
The thing about it, and I agree, this game really lived up to the hype. And, you know, my next point is actually going to be about a game that did not live up to the hype. But just to talk about this game for a second, the fact that Iowa was able to shoot 18% from the three-point line and not just get blown away by an elite offensive Gonzaga unit was very impressive. Because, I mean, you are not going to see a lot of games in which Iowa only knocks down 4 3-pointers. That was a very uncharacteristic performance. Just a game in which Iowa just could not get it going. I mean, just the rim just wouldn't let up for them, had just a lid on the basket right there from three. And so the fact they were able to again, maintain it being really close even without that, because they're a very good three-point shooting team most of the time. Again, I think that game is a pretty big outlier, a team that shoots now, you know, even after that game, still shooting 37% from beyond the arc. And they're a team that was getting open looks, just weren't quite able to knock them down. But going back to that game that just did not live up to the hype, that would be the Wisconsin absolute drubbing of Louisville on Saturday. Beat them. I think the final, it ended up being 37 points, 85-48. They knocked off an undefeated ranked Louisville squad, and it was just absolute domination. 64% shooting from the three-point line by Wisconsin, and 54% overall. They just dominated really every facet of the game. You look, you know, on the contrast, you saw Louisville, they shot 36% and 35% respectively from their overall field goal percentage and three-point percentages respectively. You look at a very complete Wisconsin team that was able to do that. They're a very forward-heavy team led by Reavers, Ford, and Potter. And those guys really were able to show up. And then, you know, they've got a nice veteran guard core as well with Brad Davison and Demetric Trice in the starting lineup, and had some nice role playing as well in that game. And so we're going to be talking about a game later as they play on Christmas Day versus Michigan State. That'll be a really fun matchup. But yeah, that was something that surprised, you know, five things that surprised me. That score line, I would say, surprised me the most, because I thought that was going to be a pretty good game. I said as much in our last podcast that I thought it'd be good. And it was not. I mean, that game was over at halftime, right? I mean, that was just a beatdown.
Yeah, and you know, I'm at loss for words, just like what happened in that game. And it's going to lead us, and when we talk about the Michigan State Wisconsin game, wow. Like, Wisconsin put an imprint on it, and we got to give them their credit. My final point, and one that's going to be a little long, I'm sorry ahead of time, but games are still going on. I think that's surprising. I'm quoting John Ronstein here. He tweeted this yesterday. Over 95% of teams that chose to play Division I college basketball are still up and running despite a once-in-a-century global pandemic. That is insane, right? And I think it definitely helps, especially right now, that you don't have as many kids on campus. So if teams are playing at home or staying on campus, there's not many opportunities to get contact traced or get corona. I hope that, obviously, no one does, and that these kids are being safe, but that's putting an unrealistic expectation, because not everybody in the whole world's done it, so why are we going to make college athletes like the model citizen? I don't think that's fair to them. But even with 95% or more of these teams going on, this comes with a reality. That reality was Keontae Johnson. This is a guy, and everyone's heard about him in the news. I wish me and Alex talked about him last week. We missed out on that, and that was totally on us. Johnson was released from the hospital, according to the Gainesville Sun. He was diagnosed with acute myocarditis, I think that's how you say it, or basically heart inflammation. That could have been, I'm not sure, 100% could have been related to COVID-19, which he did get in the summer. Right, and I'm super glad, and I think Alex is the exact same, that he is okay. And even though he's just one kid, right, in all the sphere of college basketball, right, he is a human. And he was a reminder that this is still a massive risk. Every game, every practice, right, just running a season, doing all the things, and they're taking a lot of risk. Everybody involved is putting themselves out to not only get a virus that we don't know enough about, even though we do have vaccines coming, right? That there's not a lot that we know about this thing, or if we knew everything, this wouldn't be happening. So it was a reminder that we're doing this and we have to be smart about it. And we have to appreciate that, especially, you know, when it comes to like bowl season and college football, right? There's teams that are deciding not to play, and you understand why. These kids did a lot and they risked a lot to do it. And kudos to them for doing that. Kudos to the coaches for doing that. And kudos to the college basketball world for doing the best they can. But even every day we do this, and no matter how good it looks now, there's going to be ups and downs. And we, you know, we have to be smart, not just as fans, as media members and everything else in between, right? To know that these coaches, the custodial staffs, the managers, everybody who's a part of this is doing, you know, way more than normal to make it happen. And we have to respect that, and we have to keep, and sadly, Keontae Johnson was a reminder of, even with everything that looks normal, it's still not normal. You know, not having fans in the stands, you can make a joke about whatever college team you want. That's not normal. You know, like, and I'm glad that it's going well so far, but it's still, we're playing in a pandemic and nothing will be the same after it. And I really just hope that it keeps going as well and that we just keep going on and it keeps getting better, not worse.
Yeah, of course.
It's kind of a sad point. You have anything that's a little more like lighthearted?
Well, not really. I mean, but what you really hope is that, you know, this is an isolated incident, which is so far is what it's been. Teams have been very vigilant as far as following their protocols and that sort of thing. And teams have done a really good job. They've caught, you know, if somebody's had been in contact, they've caught it early. They've quarantined. And we haven't had to have mass games missed, essentially, despite having, you know, a fair amount of traveling. I mean, much more traveling goes on in the college basketball season than in the college football season, because, you know, with college football, you're maybe traveling once a week, once every 2 weeks, whereas college basketball, you have games, you know, twice, sometimes three times a week. And so the fact that they've been able to do that has been very impressive and have been able to really keep that under control. And so I guess now we can kind of go into a couple teams that we were wanting to watch. And Jerry, you had a team that I was very interested and watching. If you wouldn't have put them down, I definitely would have. Talk about the SMU Mustangs, one of the most underrated group of five teams, I guess you could call it, in currently 5-0 with a win over Dayton so far.
Don't sleep on the Mustangs. They're doing the job. Like you said, they're 5-0, beat Dayton, and they have Kendrick Davis. One of the knocks we had on Tennessee, don't have a guy. Oh, SMU has that guy. Through five games, Kendrick Davis is averaging over 20 points, 7.6 assists on 50% shooting. He is also shooting 95% from the free throw line. Alex, you know how much I love free throws. The fact he hits 95% of them, I love it. That is huge. One of the reasons I think...
I got respect.
One of the reasons I think this team is kind of, I don't want to say underrated or not being talked about enough, is they are in the AAC, and the AAC has one superpower team, which is Houston. But and they're going to play on January 3rd. We might talk about that game. I don't remember if we have it on there or not. And you know what? Houston's a very good team. I'm not going to take away anything from them. But SMU's going to be right on their tail. They're going to be annoying. They're going to be on that. And hey, you know, beating a team in Dayton and just putting up with Dayton's fan base probably afterwards, I think reserves enough merit itself, right? Like, this is a team that has some talent. They're treading in the right direction. And they get to play their biggest challenger earlier. Everyone thinks the AAC is going to be right there for Houston for the taking. Watch out for the Mustangs, or they might run you over. Alex, you have a couple of good teams. Who do you want to talk about first?
Well, first, I want to talk about a team that's starting to get a little bit of national spotlight as well, as they were ranked in this week, coming in at number 24 in the rankings this week, and that's the Virginia Tech Hokies. And after having a little bit of a down year last year, especially with considering how good of a team that they've been in the past, you know, some of that can be attributed to, of course, you know, they had the departure of their coach, Buzz Williams, for, you know, who had been there for a while. And so they had to, of course, rebuild from that a little bit. But man, they are a team that's playing some good basketball here already. You know, again, this is Mike Young's now second season after going 16-16 last year. And they're a team that, again, much like a lot of the teams that we've talked about, you know, a little bit more of a veteran team. And they're a team that has already some nice wins, as they have knocked off most recently Clemson at home. They were able to beat Clemson at home 66-60. That's probably their their best win. Now you could call it their marquee win, but they've got some other good wins as well. I guess their other marquee win I should mention would be Villanova. Again, at that time, Villanova was ranked third, beat them in OT at the Air Force Reserve Hall of Fame Tip-Off Classic. But Virginia Tech is just a team I like. I like the way they play. They're a good defensive team. They're not a team that turns the ball over a whole lot, only 13 turnovers a game, which compared to, a lot of teams, that's really not bad. They also do a nice job of forcing turnovers as well. And I just really like Mike Young's team. I think they're playing really well. And I think that the best is even yet to come for Virginia Tech because they've got a guy coming off the bench, Jalen Cohn. He missed the first three games of the season with an injury. And then in the game against Longwood, knocked down 6 3-pointers, had 18 points off the bench in that one. And again, not that Longwood is some superpower team, but the fact that you've got a guy who can really light it up like that from outside, that's something that no team is going to say, yeah, you know what? I don't want a guy who's shooting like that. So you look to him to probably heat up a little bit more. He's currently at 38% on the season from three. But again, he's really just starting to get his feet under him as far as this season goes. Because again, he missed those first couple of games, only a sophomore for the Hokies. The only, I guess, critique I would have on them is that in terms of their scoring and their assist kind of ratio, I think they could pass the ball better. They're only averaging about 13 assists per game. And if they're able to continue to drive to the basket, work in their post play, because they've had good post play too. Of course, they're led in scoring by one of kind of more of a back to the basket forward in Kiwe Aluma, shooting 14. He's getting about 15 points per game. And getting nearly 7 rebounds leads them in both of those categories. But if they're able to move the ball around more, that's going to free up those shooters. Guys like Jalen Cohn and like they've got another shooter shooting nearly 47%, Hunter Couture, another sophomore for Virginia Tech. And so they're a little bit of a young team, but I think if they're able to get it, and Wabissa Bide really passed the ball well against Longwood, had 8 assists to lead the Hokies in that game. And if he's able to keep taking that step forward, right now he's only averaging about 3 assists or so per game. And if he can just increase those numbers, and if the team can just pass better as a unit, I think that Virginia Tech could be a very dangerous team in a year that kind of the ACC big dogs are maybe a little bit down. You've seen already a couple of losses from both Duke and North Carolina. See that maybe Virginia Tech may be able to make some noise in that.
And I want to keep in the ACC. I'm going to talk about the team that lost to Virginia Tech because, of course, you look at my notes, so you wanted to make me look bad. I really like Clemson. Even if Clemson lost to Virginia Tech, we see some of their weaknesses. This is a dark horse team for a reason. They're a very good defensive program. I kind of feel Virginia-esque when I talk about them, just not as much prestige, right? You don't have everything floating around like the Cavaliers do. But, while the Tigers right now may also be fighting for the CFP playoff, their college basketball team has been a solid program the last couple years. I remember their game against Duke last year where then Duke went to Clemson and lost because Clemson can lock teams down. But you have to plan for them. You really have to. And you know what? Virginia Tech did. That's why they won. But this is a team that's only allowing 53.4 points this season. That's crazy. And yes, they're not scoring a lot. And this is where I want to see one thing. And I think it comes from Amir Sims. It's their 6'8 forward. He's averaging about 12 points right now. If he could get them up to 15, that team's going to take the step they need. Because this team doesn't need to drop 95. This team doesn't have to be fast-paced. They don't have to run the air raid. They don't have to, try to do anything they need necessary to win, like just score at will. They can lock teams down. They just need a couple more points. They need Amir Sims to step up. He's not playing bad. He just needs to be a senior. And it's weird to say that about college basketball, right? Like, he needs to be a senior. We say that all the time in college football, but it feels nice to say about college basketball. He has the ability. I think he has the tools to be successful. I still like it. Even with the loss to Virginia Tech, I like Clemson. Keep them in mind. And remember, whenever they play North Carolina or Duke or Virginia, that's going to be a game. And I think their football team, rightfully so, shadows over them a little bit, but I hope they kind of keep that cloak on and they stay successful. This team has a lot of potential, and defensive teams are annoying. You have to plan for Clemson. That's why I like them. Alex, you're also, see, this is, I hate you. You're probably going to go to the Big Ten next, so go ahead, go to the Big Ten, talk about your Big Ten team, because I picked a Big Ten team too, and you wanted to just copy and paste. I'm just kidding. Go ahead, Alex.
I mean, that is a fair argument. Jerry always does his notes before I do mine. But man, just first, again, I'm with you. I think that, the fact that Clemson lost to Virginia Tech, I don't think that, that's not a bad loss. Last season, that might have been seen as like, okay, that loss, they probably as the 24th ranked team, they probably should have beaten them. But I think that those are two very evenly matched teams. Both of the teams are very similar, and you just saw the team that typically averages a little bit more points per game is the team that won that one by a very small margin. So I really like Clemson as well. Talked about them last week. And so I'm pretty high on them as well. Another team that I'm high on, even though they ended up losing this week, and I'll talk about kind of one of the drawbacks that I had of them, and we kind of mentioned it last week, but it's the Rutgers Scarlet Knights. They are a team that I've been very high on this season. They are now 6-1 this afternoon. Of course, we are recording this on Wednesday, December 23rd. They took on Ohio State in Columbus, fell in that game 80-68. And they fell for the reason that we thought they were going to fail. You know, the one question mark that I had on them last week, it wasn't about scoring, it wasn't about playing deep, it was about defending in the post. And you saw in this game, their starting center, Miles Johnson, the junior, fouled out in that ball game. And you saw kind of down the stretch, last 10 minutes of the game, Ohio State, their wide swath of big men were able to take over. You've got guys, most notably Kyle Young, popped off. He ended up having 17 points. A guy that has not really averaged a whole ton of points, only this season averaging 6 points a game. He goes off for 17. And you also have guys, but their guard play is good too with Ohio State. They're a team that, again, they're ranked 23rd for a reason. They move up to 7-1. But man, Rutgers is, again, much like the SMU Mustangs, they've got a guy who, when they need a shot, they can go to him. And that's Ron Harper. Even in a loss in this game, Harper had 20 points, ended up having 6 rebounds as well. I would say the biggest thing that hurt them a little bit is that they don't pass the ball incredibly well outside of their other, I guess their point guard, you could call him, Jacob Young, a senior out of Houston. It's really been the Young and Harper show for Rutgers, and in a game in which both of them played pretty solidly. They also got some help from, again, just another kind of combo off guard in Montez Mathis. He dropped 16 as well. Rutgers is a very good team. And again, the guard play is going to be kind of their signature. But, you know, they were able to hold down Kofi Coburn in their previous game versus Illinois, ended up getting that win by 3 points, 91-88. And they were able to hold Coburn down. I mean, Coburn ended up having 17 points and 12 boards, but Rutgers just did not let them get killed, because aside from Coburn, Illinois plays almost all guards, even a lot of their better bench players, mainly guards, you know, with Curbelo coming off the bench. But man, Rutgers is just a team that can score. They can score the basketball. They've got really good guard play, and it's going to be huge to see how they're able to keep their big man Johnson out of foul trouble this season. Because when he gets into foul trouble, their team, if they play a Luka Garza and he gets into foul trouble, Rutgers is going to be in trouble, because they don't really have a whole lot of personnel to guard him. Because again, they've got Johnson, and then they've got Cliff Omoruyi. It's very hard to say, kind of a mouthful, but you get the idea. It's really just those two guys, and as a matter of fact, he wasn't even available today, so that no doubt hindered the guarding efforts against a multiple big team like Ohio State that plays a lot of forwards at the same time. As Liddell is technically a forward, Justin Suing also a forward, and Kyle Young, of course, that we mentioned, all three in the starting lineup. So it's going to be a tough team to beat when your only big man kind of fouls out like that. But man. Ron Harper is just such a fun guy to watch. He's a guy that can shoot. He can shoot. He can drive the ball. I'd like to see him develop a little bit more of a passing game, because I think that no doubt when he's driving the lane, he's attracting a crowd. And you know, he had no assists in the ball game today against Ohio State. And I think that if he can even get just a couple of assists instead of going all the way to the basket, you know, dump it off, because you know, again, he's going to be attracting help defense. So it's a team that, again, typically moves the ball pretty well, but they have room to improve, no doubt about it, as far as that, because I think that they could get better big man play as well. Again, it really hurt that Miles Johnson fouled out in this ball game and that Omoruyi was not available. But I really like Rutgers even after the loss today.
Yeah, no, Rutgers, we talked about them, and just, you know, they have two guys who can ball. And, you know, Illinois has had some reality checks, I feel like, with Mizzou, Rutgers, you know. But Illinois is still a very good team, and the Big Ten is deep. They're so deep that I'm going to talk about a team that's flown under the radar that usually doesn't fly under the radar because of just who they are, and that's number 19, Michigan. My mom's going to hate me for talking about Michigan in a positive light, and that's okay, because sometimes you got to do what you got to do. But I really like where this team is at. They really humbled UCF. If we were going to do five teams, I had some backup teams already, you know, in the chamber, they humbled UCF, a team that I like and I really like Coach Dawkins. They beat him 80-58. And I'm really just high on Juwan Howard. He's a great coach. He's done a great job there. And he's making this program even better than it once. It's getting into that Trey Burke, John Beilein level that they're used to, right? Like, really good, know what they're doing. Here's an example of this. In their next class already, I know we're not, into super big to college basketball recruiting right now, but already for the 2021 class, he's got 2 5-star kids from Florida. He's got Caleb Houston, the number one small forward in the country committed, and I forget who else he is. Ayaz Musa Diabate, the number 4 power forward in the country. Both kids from Florida committed for next year already. That's huge. He's getting kids from Florida. Jim Harbaugh couldn't even do that, right? Like, you got to give the credit where credit is due right now. He's getting some kids in already. And like the Big Ten this year, we already talked about Kofi Coburn. We talked about Luka Garza, another good big man who's going to grow a lot with this program. Hunter Dickinson, he is a freshman, right? And he's been pretty good. He's more back to the basket and stuff. But like, even if he's not great this year, he's going to get battle tested in the conference that's been battle testing everybody else. So like, even if he doesn't shine right now, he's going to be good. He's going to be playing against some great other big men. And senior Isaiah Livers, a 6'7" from Kalamazoo forward, he can ball as well. I feel like Michigan may not be right there, like, may not be a championship team right now, right? Like, yes, this is Michigan. We expect great things. They may not even be the best team in their state, and that's a fair argument if you want to put Michigan State ahead of them. I know Alex would, right? But they are good, and they're going to get, I feel like in a very crowded Big Ten, they're going to get a little overshadowed, but give Juwan Howard his credit. He's done really well at this program. This is a guy who has no college basketball experience. It's like kind of like Herm Edwards at Arizona State. Like, there's a lot of stuff that's going on here that's good and positive. Alex, you're giving me funny faces, and you have one more team to talk about. End out the second segment so we can talk about these ranked games, please. Thank you.
Yeah, well, before I get to talking about my third team, which is going to be the UCLA Bruins, I mean, I agree. I'm a big Michigan hater, all sports. I don't discriminate. I don't just limit my Michigan hate to football. I've been a Michigan, number one opposition for many, many years. But I agree with you completely. I think that Hunter Dickinson is playing at a level that I don't even think that Michigan was really expecting. He's leading them currently in points and rebounds per game, averaging about 16 points and 7 rebounds per game. Also getting nearly 2 blocks a game, too, so really doing a nice job of protecting the paint. And you finally seeing Isaiah Livers, he's starting to take that next step as kind of their future score. I mean, he's averaging 15 points. Next guy behind him is averaging 10, and he's a guy that's been solid, shooting 43% from three-point range, 94% from the stripe. If he can just keep getting to the free throw line, I think that Michigan is going to be a really tough team to beat. And so I really like Michigan for the first time in a couple of years, and I agree with you completely. The work that Juwan Howard has done, especially on the recruiting trail, has been very good. And you can see him starting to take it really and translate that into, I guess you could say, on-field production. Or I guess on-court production would be in basketball. But the last team I want to talk about is UCLA. UCLA sneakily might be the best team in a very odd, interesting Pac-12 conference. Really, you look at the Pac-12 top to bottom and all the teams that are in it, and, Oregon's obviously ranked 25th, and they're a solid team, no doubt about it. Their only loss is to Mizzou. And then you look at USC, they're definitely not a bad team either, but I just really like the Bruins. They were a team that started off really, really slow last year. But man, Mick Cronin, by the end of the season, they looked like the best team. Like, I would have said if they had a Pac-12 tournament, I think UCLA might have been the favorite in that. Their turnaround midseason, it's like they really kind of discovered who they were as a team. And they've started to kind of translate that into playing this season. They had an early loss in the first game of the season to San Diego State. Just did look like they just weren't ready to play, just didn't come ready to play in that one. Then they knocked off Pepperdine. But the real good game that they've had is that they have a 9-point win at home over a Marquette team that's already caused a couple of upsets, and they've been playing some good ball there in the Big East as well. So I like UCLA. I think they're a solid team. Tiger Campbell, their point guard, is playing just really solid basketball. Again, nothing too flashy, but he's averaging 11.7 assists. He's kind of the guy that really gets them moving the ball. They're averaging 16 assists per game, which is a lot better than some of the teams that we were kind of talking about going into it. And they've had some nice scoring as well. Guys, they're, of course, being led in scoring by Jamie Jock Jr., a sophomore from California as well, and he's scoring nearly 14 points a game. UCLA, my only thing is, I think that they could, they definitely have room to improve three-point shooting, only shooting about 35%. And some of that, I think, will come. They've got, of course, Kentucky transfer Johnny Juzang, who was really billed as a shooter, currently only shooting 18% from beyond the arc. Tiger Campbell also only coming in at about 24. You expect both of those numbers throughout the season will increase, and that will definitely help UCLA as a squad. But man, UCLA just does a very nice job of attacking the basket and then passing out, or passing even more specifically, passing also down to some of their forwards, getting those guys some easy buckets. And really, again, their only other loss besides that opening game loss versus San Diego State was in a very close game with Ohio State at Ohio State their last time out. So UCLA, definitely a team that's not getting talked about a whole lot, but really, I mean, who's talking a whole lot about the Pac-12 in general? Don't be surprised if UCLA is a top two, if not the best team in the Pac-12 by the end of the season. I think McCronin's a very good coach, and I think that he really did a nice job of turning them around this year. This season, it looks like they're already starting to find their stride. And again, played a very good game against a solid Ohio State team that we just saw knock off Rutgers 80-68. So Ohio State going to be a tough team to beat at home, but I really like UCLA down the stretch of the Pac-12.
And you know what? We deserve to have UCLA be a good basketball program. This is one of the most like storied programs ever in college basketball. We deserve to see them being successful. I'm glad that they're doing well. Like, it's sad to say, I want to say they've fallen off, right? They're still very good. They've always been a very good program, but they haven't been as good as they should be with the history they have. So whenever there's a good UCLA program, it feels a little bit like nature's healing, and I love when nature heals. Duh. Go environment. I don't know. That's probably the most political message we've said on this whole show. Oh, no. Ah! Alex is giving me the thumbs down. He said, what's an environment?
Ah, politics.
He said, what is the environment? And speaking of random environments, let's go to...
Sorry, what is outside?
Yeah, no, we don't go outside. And you shouldn't go outside anyways, because Christmas Day has everything you could want. If you don't want to watch NBA basketball, because I understand completely, we have a great game for you. How about number 9, Wisconsin, at number 12, Michigan State? I'm going to let Alex talk about Michigan State forever, so I'm just going to get this point in about Wisconsin. We talked about him a bit last week. This is a veteran team. Demetrius Trice doing great at point guard. He's being the floor general they need him to be. He's not turning the ball over. He's not flashy. He's not beautiful. But he is doing what he needs to do. This Wisconsin team who just beat up on Louisville, like we talked about, their experience, and they may not be the most talented, right? You can argue that they are not all five-star blue-chip kids. But they, you know... I'm going to steal the Matt Campbell line. It feels like at times they're playing like a five-star culture team. I hate saying that. I think it's really lame. But they're kind of exemplifying this. They're number 9 for a reason. Michigan State just got beat by Northwestern, though. And I'm not going to take away from that, right? But this is if there's going to be a revenge game, I hope Wisconsin's going to be on the other end of that. Alex, go ahead, and you could talk a bit more about your Michigan State Spartans, because I know your love for them.
Yeah, well, with Michigan State, the thing, and I only watched because we were having a family Christmas, actually. I only watched about 10 minutes or so of the ball game against Northwestern. But what I really saw was that they were just unable to. It looks like Michigan State just hasn't quite found the correct lineup to be playing at the same time. There's some guys, I think, that may be starting right now that aren't going to be starting in the future, just because their on-court production has not been very good. And some of it, I think, it was a little bit flukish. Like, Rocket Watts just got absolutely dominated on offense and defense by Northwestern's Boo Booey, to the tune of he scored 30 points and Rocket Watts, while guarding him, scored 5. You really want him to rebound in this game against Wisconsin. I'm not talking about on the glass, because you can guarantee that he's going to be guarding either Davison, but most likely he'll be guarding Demetric Trice at the point guard spot for Wisconsin. And Wisconsin's just, again, they're just a solid team. Just came off just an absolute beatdown of Louisville, and followed that up with a nice solid 14-point victory over Nebraska as well. They're a team that's they're very good on offense. They're a sound team. They're gonna play defense well. They guard hard. And Michigan State is really just going to need to find who is going to step up on offense. I'd like to see, and you saw it a little bit in that Northwestern game, especially towards the end, instead of really trying to make a push for that victory, which you could argue they possibly could have come back. You know, again, it only ended up being a 14-point game, and they had guys the last, you know, after the under four timeout, they had some guys come in that don't get to play a lot, guys like Jack Hoiberg, Matty Sissoko, guys like that really hadn't gotten a whole lot of play over their careers. But I think you're going to start seeing some more guys just mixed in off the bench, because to really see who your best lineup is. because there's been games where Rocket Watts has played really, really well on offense. In the first game of the season, Foster Lawyer had, I think, 18, you know, he had 20 points. 18 of them were in, like, the first half. And now he's barely getting to play. I like Lawyer's effort on defense. He probably had the most success against Bubui as far as guarding him, even though he's not as athletic as Rocket Watts. So I'd like to see him get a little bit more play. He's been behind Cassius Winston his entire career, and now after starting the first game, he's kind of fallen into that backup point guard slot once again behind Rocket Watts. But it really needs to be based on feeling. One thing I have been impressed about, though, is Malik Hall has played some good minutes off the bench at the forward position. He had 10 points and 9 boards in that loss to Northwestern off the bench. And I've also thought that Greg Brown coming off the bench, you know, he's a guy that started some games last year and even had started a game or two this year, but he seems to have really found his stroke coming off the bench. He's a guy that, again, played 25 minutes, scored him 10 points, and had 5 boards as well. And so it's there's promising aspects of Michigan State that I really like. It'll just really depend on how they're able to guard down low, because while Joey Hauser is a forward, I'm not sure how much I like his matchup against a guy like Potter, against a guy like Nate Reavers. It'll be interesting to see how they're able to play in that, because again, Wisconsin's going to play a much taller lineup than a lot of teams with Potter, Reavers, and they're really more of their, I guess you can say, their center, Aleem Ford, a guy who's a little bit more back to the basket, only shooting 31% from beyond the arc this season. And it'll be interesting to see how Michigan State is able to match up with them. It's going to be a game that I'm going to definitely try and watch before heading off on vacation. But it's going to be a really fun game, no doubt about it. Or fun as in it's going to be good basketball. It's not going to be flashy and high scoring, I would imagine, just based on the nature of the two teams. But it's going to be a really fun game, no doubt.
And we just love it. It's a big time this year, right? Almost any game, it feels like you have like once, at least 3 times a week, almost, I could say, once we start getting into it. It just feels like Wisconsin or Michigan State or like 1,000 of the ranked teams will be playing against each other. That's the Big Ten this year. They look really good. And, you know, I just hope they don't knock each other too much. But these are all really good teams. I'm excited for that game as well. And speaking of the day after Boxing Day, which I know Alex is like, why are we talking about Boxing Day? We're in America. Like right after when Alex goes on vacation,
I was going to cap on you for that.
I knew you were. Gonzaga is playing Virginia. And wow, this is just, that's going to be such a weird game. Gonzaga is one of those offensive teams that will try to put the ball through the net whenever possible. More than I think and obviously that's the point of the game. But they do it really well, and they're number one for a reason. Virginia, on the other hand, they're going to try to stop you, and they're one of the better teams in the country at stopping you. This is a weird year for Virginia. They've had some real, you know, they've been up and down. This is going to sound weird. I kind of feel like this is weirdly a trap game for Gonzaga, right? Like, and you're going to say, Virginia? Well, how is this a trap game? They're number 16, right? Well, this is not the Virginia program with Kyle Guy and DeAndre Herter that is the number one seed in the NCAA tournament, right? This is a team that's had some ups and downs, right? And I think that a lot of people are down on Virginia. So if there's a game where Gonzaga, who's really brought their A game at every moment and proven why they have that number one ranking is, if there's one game they were to flounder or to struggle with, it's going to be a team that's really good defensively and just knows how to put people in the chokehold. I still like Gonzaga in this game. I am Jalen Suggs' biggest fan. I might get him tattooed on my chest or something. Like, I love that man. He has been great. He has shown why he could be arguably the best freshman in the country. I don't even know who else you could really put there, right? Like, he is a hooper. And if the Gonzaga comes out and plays again, they're going to show why they're number one. I hope they do. But this is a game where they're going to have to be – they still have to be on their game. Virginia is so annoying, and they're a team you have to plan for. Just kind of like I talked about Clemson being a team you have to plan for in the ACC. Well, nationally, you have to plan for Virginia because you know they're going to annoy the hell out of you on the defensive end. What do you feel about this game, Alex? I know you're probably going to say Virginia sucks, so go ahead.
Well, you know I'm a Virginia hater as well. I understand what they do, and I think that it's a very good scheme. It's just so not fun to watch. You know, the way that they slow everything down, you know, they wait till the very end of the shot clock to make something happen. They play that pack line defense that just forces you to not really do anything. And it's worked very well for them. The only thing, this game is going to come down to who's able to control the tempo. Because you know that Gonzaga, of course, led by Suggs and the two big men, Timmy and Kisper, they're going to want to try and get out and run. They're going to try and do some transition stuff. I mean, you're talking about a team that averages 95 points a game. and they're taking on a team that averages 75 points a game and only allows 54 in Virginia. Gonzaga, I think the more points that are scored in this game, the better chance Gonzaga has, because I've looked at Virginia, and while their defense is really good, their offense is not. I mean, they scored 76 in their last time out against a William and Mary team that, you know, at that point did not have their, you know, they're 2-3 after that game. They were taken to overtime by Kent State at home. And you know, so none of their wins have been incredibly convincing. Of course, they had the power outage against San Francisco in the Home Light Classic, in which they dropped that game for their only loss of the season, 61-60. And so that's always the worry about Virginia, is that they're not going to be able to score. And I think you're going to see, much like we've seen a lot in college football this season, is I think in this game, you know, don't be surprised if good offense beats good defense in this one, because Gonzaga, they're just such a hard team to match up with, that Virginia, I'm just not sure how they're going to be able to keep up with them. Because you know, on the one hand, you've got Jay Huff, who will be able to, I think, kind of neutralize, at least in some regard, one of the two big men. Most likely, I would say Timmy, as he tends to play a little bit more back to the basket than his counterpart Kispert. And Hauser, I'm sure, will guard Kispert as the only other forward in the starting lineup for Virginia. But Virginia, again, much like a lot of the time, they don't have a real feature score. This is nowhere near the team that won the championship a couple of years ago, where they had some good scores. You know, they had, you know, most notably Kyle Guy was just a knockdown shooter. They don't really have that this season. And so they're offensively challenged, which, again, is nothing really new for them. But I think that you will need to play some offense in order to beat Gonzaga, along with playing elite, you know, along with having your best defensive game of the season to hold down the Zags. I like the Zags in this one. I just think that, again, they've just got too much firepower for Virginia to compete with them. Although it looks like the matchup predictor with ESPN's BPI is actually barely 50.1 to 49.9 predicting UVA, most likely because they're at home. But again, Gonzaga, I mean, they're a tough place to beat. They're a tough place to beat anywhere, right? So, I mean, you could play them about anywhere, and they're going to be scoring some points. And again, a team that regularly scores over 90 points versus a team that, you know, they could play a D3 school and they might not score 90 points just because of how they play. Right. So that's going to be I think it's a tougher matchup for Virginia than Gonzaga, just because I think that Gonzaga's defense relative to Virginia's offense is better.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. It's going to be an ugly game. Either it's going to be ugly as it's going to be really close, and that means Gonzaga's not missing their shots, or Gonzaga's missing their shots, my bad, and Virginia's playing their style of game, or it's going to be ugly because Gonzaga's going to slaughter Virginia. Right. Like, there's not a lot of ways where this game comes out pretty. So, if you're a college hoops fan, you'll like it.
Yeah, this is not going to be a
fun
game.
If you're a college hoops fan, you're going to like this game. If you're not, you're not going to like it. Like, there's no in-between. Games that I know people are going to like. Saturday, January 2nd, we take a little break here, right? Or at least ranked games break, I should say. Number 10, Texas versus number 3, Kansas. Okay, like, this feels really weird, only because Kansas has really proven it. They just beat West Virginia. They're hooping. Texas hasn't, I don't think, lost a game so far. Alex, I know you know a bit more about Texas than I do. I know Kansas is doing their part. I just have a vendetta against Kansas until they get hit by the FBI stuff. I feel the same way about LSU. Don't worry. I'm not just hating on the Big 12 or Arizona 3. Arizona even released their notice of allegations, you cowards. Like, any team that's been really hit by this FBI stuff and still hasn't got their sanctions, I'm just kind of waiting for that. But Kansas is still being successful without it, with that lingering over them, and Bill Self's still their coach. So, you could talk to me a bit about Texas if you want, but I still have my vendetta against Kansas.
Yeah, Texas is a team that has already accumulated a couple of nice, you know, nice solid little wins. You know, they knocked off a pretty scrappy Davidson team very early in the season at the Maui Invitational. They also have wins in the Maui Invitational over Indiana, a very convincing 22-point win over the Hoosiers, as well as a 2-point win over, at the time, ranked 14th North Carolina. So they're a team that's played some really nice basketball so far this season. Only loss was very, very close in the Big East Big 12 battle at home versus Villanova, a game in which Villanova won that one by 4 points. But one thing that's really stood out to me with Texas is that they, because they have not been incredibly, incredibly elite the last couple of years, to where they're getting just a ton of five-star talent, like maybe a couple, you know, back in the Kevin Durant type days in the mid-2000s, they've gotten a group that's a very veteran group. You've got guys like Matt Coleman, Courtney Ramey, Andrew Jones, guys that have been there for a good while. And again, it's the same thing you've seen across the board really in college basketball, where more veteran teams have been able to do well because they're teams that have played together. They know who they are. They understand their teammates and how they play. And that's really been the difference. And you've even seen, even more recently, guys like Greg Brown, who was an incredibly highly touted prospect out of pretty much out of Austin. He was out of Leander Vandergrift in Texas. And he's a guy that really had a nice game for Texas in their last time out versus Oklahoma State. So the more that these guys are kind of able to work themselves in, I mean, Brown in that game had 24 points to lead all scores. And in a game in which Courtney Ramey had a little bit of an off game, Brown was able to kind of pick him up. And so I'm actually very bullish on Texas. I think they're a very solid squad. Kansas, on the other hand, again, I'm going to sound like a broken record. I have concerns with their offense because, you know, in a game, and granted, they did win this game against Texas Tech. This was just not great basketball being played. You know, they won a game against Texas Tech 58-57. It was like neither team could get it going on offense. And so I worry a little bit about who the feature scorer is for Kansas because in theory, it should be Ochai Agbaji, right? But we haven't seen that consistently. I mean, we saw in their most recent game, it was Christian Brown. Christian Brown had a really nice game their last time out, led the Jayhawks with 22 points in that game against West Virginia in a nice win for the Jayhawks. That win made me feel much more confident about their offense. You had a nice balanced performance. You had 22 from Brown and 17 from their high energy, I guess, forward Jalen Wilson out of Denton, Texas, as well. He had 17 points and 7 boards. So really, it's just, I guess, kind of a little bit of the guard play. One thing that was nice was that Brown, as kind of a facilitator as well, also had 7 assists in that game. So I'm looking forward to Kansas trying to really just continue that against a very athletic, rangy Texas team. Texas is going to be a hard team to beat, even if they are going to Kansas. So this will be probably, in my opinion, either this game or the game we're probably going to talk about next, those are going to be the two most fun games to watch because the next game I think we're talking about is Iowa versus Rutgers. 4-11, Rutgers coming off the loss, Iowa also coming off the loss. Two teams that can really play some offense going to be doing battle in this one.
Dude, we talked about both these teams already. Like, it's going to be Ron Harper and I know Luke Garza as well. Like, but Ron Harper and who else am I talking about? Names, whatever, they don't matter.
Jacob Young,
yeah, like both of those guys and Jacob Young, like these, we know what this is going to be. We know it's going to be a battle. And I think we've talked about both of these teams a lot. I think again, it just speaks to the Big Ten. We already talked about two Big Ten games, right? Like two Big Ten in conference games and ranked to ranked games. That's how good this league is this year, at least. And you know, this is both of these teams need to keep up this momentum this year, right? One of the things I worry about looking long scale, long-term picture, right, is these guys are all having one really good year, right, all at once. So it's going to be those who stand out who are going to start winning those recruiting battles for the next couple of years. So if you're the Big Ten, you're like, this feels like every team right now has to be on edge, not just week to week, game by game, but in, you know, in the recruiting battles as well. Because, okay, if Michigan State struggles this year, what stops Michigan from flipping one of those kids? You know, if Iowa keeps picking it up, what stops them taking a kid from Illinois, right? And like, that's a good thing. You like the competition to get the best talent from these areas and these guys that are going for is good for that league. You know, like this is the exact opposite of the football of their football scheme right now. Like, so I'm very interested just how to see games like these every week are really going to determine a lot of things in the future. And with a lot of these teams kind of cresting and, well, I don't say cresting, but peaking at the right time. Are peaking all talent-wise this year. Wow, we have a lot going on in the Big Ten. I could go on forever about the Big Ten, the recruiting landscape. So let's talk about two teams that are going to have another, like this is just gonna be another good game. Villanova, number 5 overall right now, versus number 2 Xavier, the X-Men. You know, I'm really high on Connor Golubsky. I think he's just Ryan Arcidiacono 2.0. I think that is super cool. Xavier's proven what they've got. They've done what they've had to do, right? They have a ranking for a reason. This is going to be a fun game to watch. I think the two ahead of it in Texas and Kansas and Iowa Rutgers are going to be good. At least, you know, let's talk about this game a lot because I don't want to talk about Virginia more, Alex. So, like, you give me a nice spiel about this game because I really don't want to talk about Virginia Tech, Virginia next.
No doubt about it. Another game that's going to be just a really scrappy, gritty game. With Villanova, or I guess with Xavier, you know, watching them play Creighton today, they fell 60, I believe, 61, 66-61 It was a very close game, down to the wire. Both teams did not play very well on offense, and a lot of that had to do with the fact that Zach Fremantle, the leading scorer for Xavier, did not play very well today. He was in foul trouble, actually fouled out in that game as well with about 5 minutes to go. It was a very tough game, and because he did not play very, you know, he obviously did not play a lot, nor did he play particularly well, only had about 7 points or so, only had about 7 points, two rebounds. He averages closer to like 17 and 9. It's going to be very interesting to see how Villanova is able to match up with him, because you want to say it's probably going to be a guy like Robinson Earl or Samuels matching up with him down low. That could be a potential mismatch, because neither one of those guys I feel like are really center types. I think they're more of like 3-4 type of forwards. So that'll be interesting. But Jeremiah Robinson Earl has also been playing some good basketball for Villanova, so I like that as well. Shooting 54% from the field also leads them in rebounds with 7.6 a game. So it's going to be a fun game. I mean, the Big East, to me, I always love watching them. I hope that both of these teams play better on offense. Well, most specifically, Xavier plays better on offense than they did today. I think that they did not hit their normal offensive flow really at any point in this game versus Creighton. And granted, Creighton didn't really hit it either. Again, they lost 66-61, so a fairly low-scoring game considering how the two teams normally play. You know, they shot 25% from three-point range and only 35% from the field. I expect those numbers to go up against a team like Villanova. Again, a pretty offensive team. I like Villanova in this game, but right now they're in a little bit of a battle with Marquette, 25-24, getting close to halftime in that one on the road at Marquette. So Marquette looking to notch another upset here early in Big East play. Gillespie currently leads the way with Villanova with 11 points. So as you said, it may be more the veteran guard play that's able to carry Villanova over a team like Xavier that relies more on their post.
I'm going to start a secret. This is very secretive, only to the podcast. I'm going to start a secret plan to push Syracuse back into the Big East. I actually love them in the ACC as well. I really love Jim Boeheim versus Coach K every year. That's been a great matchup, right? But the Big East is good. And we deserve to see the Big East we once did. I want to see those games back in Madison Square Garden, where you have the Syracuse 2-3 zone going up against UConn, right? Or going up against Villanova. Like, I want to see, I don't remember Villanova's Big East or not, but like, you know, just having, not what we're used to, but we used to have, and that used to be a really fun conference that was built for basketball. So we're starting the lobbying campaign now. Hashtag Syracuse back to the Big East. Tweet it at us or something. I don't know. I want that to happen secretly.
I'm with it.
Just secretly, though. I can't be too loud about that. Last game that we're going to talk about again on the 2nd. So right after you finish up enjoying the fact that we finished 2020 somehow, you have Virginia Tech, Virginia. I feel like it's like a weird spoiler to all the great games we have in front of it, because this is going to be a really defensive battle, right? Like, it's going to be watching a game of chess unfold on a basketball court. And there's some things to love about it and there's some things to hate about it. One of it's going to be, it's going to be low scoring. It's going to be painful. Every possession is going to feel longer. It's going to be, you know, you got to have to be a little bit of a sicko to like this game, right? Like, to somebody who really enjoys the deep and gritty of college basketball. And that's what it's going to come down to. Both these teams are going to be annoying to watch. Both these teams are going to be annoying to each other. If this game ended 5-5, I wouldn't be surprised. Alex, if you even want to talk about this game, I know you don't like Virginia and you like Virginia Tech, but do you even want to talk about this game?
I think you've hit it exactly. It's a game, if you like defense, I mean, this is the game for you. If you like defense and a little bit of suspect offense, this is the one that you're going to want to watch right here. And one game, I can't believe that you even forgot about it, Jerry. Family might have to disown you for this one, but there's one more extra special rank that I'd much rather talk about. And we're talking about Duke and we're talking about Florida State, two teams that were ranked much higher in the beginning of the season, but both have had a loss or two recently. That game is going to be at Florida State also on January 2nd. Duke ranked number 20th at 3-2. Florida State coming off a loss, if I'm not mistaken. They are currently now 5-1. Or no, they lost to UCF two games ago after knocking off Gardner-Webb on Monday of this week. This is a game that, again, we're typically is, you know, up in the deciding of the ACC, but two teams that already have some losses on the season doing battle there at Florida State.
Alex, you know I can talk about Duke and Florida, like, forever. That's kind of one of the reasons I may not put that game on there. it's just going to be – this is both teams have taken a little bit of time off. Not play as many games. Like you said, Florida State just played Gardner-Webb. Both teams have been hit with reality. But this game is going to look like it looks every year. It is going to be very close because both sides have some really good positives. I think Duke still has a lot of talent, right? I think it's like I want to say it's Kentucky bad, but they've had their struggles. And against ranked opponents, you've seen it, right? This is a young team that looked better against Notre Dame. I actually put a lot of stock in that Notre Dame game. I know putting stock in Notre Dame games feels weird, right? But I felt like Notre Dame's probably going to be the most battle-tested team, if not one of the most battle-tested teams in the country. So for them to come out with a win there was really important. Florida State's going to do, Coach Hamilton's a really good coach. I'm not going to get too deep into this game just yet. I think that we still have to see a lot from both sides. Duke's really young. Both teams are going to be really well coached. I haven't overly prepped on the Duke or Florida State side as much. I talked a bit about them before they lost to UCF, right? It's just me. Who's going to win the battle of MJ Walker, Raekwon Gray versus, DJ Stewart and these guys? I just want to see DJ Stewart succeed secretly, because he went to Fenwick for 3 years, then went to Whitney Young. He's a Chicago kid that's going to Duke, so that's pretty fun. I enjoy seeing Chicago kids succeed. Shout out to Io DeSumo. Shout out to Adam Miller. Shout out to Xavier Pinson. Shout out to Taylor Horne-Tucker, right? I love seeing all of those dogs eat. So I want to see DJ Stewart turn into the man. I want to see him be successful, but I don't want to hype myself too much on Duke talk because this is not a Duke podcast, and I could definitely make about six of them. So I was saving myself from just going on for 30 minutes. So don't disown me, Mom and Dad. Well, I'm definitely going to get disowned because I talked about Michigan in a positive light and then didn't talk about Duke for 3 hours afterwards. So something's going to give. If you see me in a really dark area, it's probably because I'm outside of a McDonald's trying to record this. So, Alex, in case you ever see that on the Zoom and you can't see me, don't worry. I'm okay. I'm having a Big Mac. Just one that'll last me six meals.
Yeah.
But yeah,
in the future, if you only hear me on the podcast, you know what happened to Jarius. He had, the triple threat of saying Notre Dame's not terrible, saying Michigan is good, and then not mentioning Duke. That's about the three strikes and he's out. But man, Duke is such an interesting team because Matthew Hurt has played really, really well for them. I mean, he's been the feature guy, averaging 19 and 8 per game with points and rebounds. Just having himself a really nice season, efficient, 52% from the field, and shooting 38% from 3-point range. To me, I think that Duke can win this game if they can start to figure out their guard play, because their post play has been solid, but they've turned the ball over a lot. And again, you kind of hit it. It's been because they've got a younger team in their backcourt with guys like Stewart and like guys like their other point guard Jeremy Roach. And so I think that as these guys kind of mature and play some more games, I think that they're going to get a lot better. But man, with a team like Florida State that just plays so hard, they play such an aggressive style of defense, of course, led by guys like MJ Walker, Scotty Barnes, and Anthony Polite. I think they're a team that's going to guard really tough. And for a team that turns the ball over about 15 times per game in Duke, I think it's going to be a very tough matchup. But on the other hand, I think that they also have the best post player in the game when you're talking about Matthew Hurt. So again, it's going to be a little bit of a battle of styles. If Florida State's able to speed Duke up and Duke starts to turn the ball over, Florida State could run away with this one. But if Duke is able to just kind of calm themselves down and play a nice game and try and play as clean of a game as possible, the cleaner that they're able to play, the closer this game is going to be, because Florida State's just a team that plays with so much just raw aggression, especially out front on younger guards, a thing that kind of Leonard Hamilton's teams are known for. So it'll be a really fun game. That'll be kind of the game that I guess closes out the night, because that one's going to be starting at 7 o'clock on January 2nd. But yeah, just a great slate of games overall coming up in between, I guess, this podcast and our next one, which will probably be after New Year's. I know that I'm going on vacation, so I will be unfortunately unavailable. Jerry might come out with a little bit of stuff in the meantime, though. So yeah, just stay tuned, because me and Jerry love talking about college basketball. We'll be talking about recruiting coming up soon. That'll probably also be after January 2nd. January 2nd, a pretty big day as far as people announcing their commitments in college football. So we'll be talking about that coming up in the future. But yeah, I mean, again, just Thank you so much for listening to us. We're having a great time doing all this.
Yeah, and I'll end it on this. You know what? What Duke needs, they need Joey Baker to turn into J.J. Redick. That's what I'm going to end it on. I don't want to talk any more about it. Thank you again a million times for listening. We're probably going to take a little break. If I do upload another episode on here, it will be just me for a little bit. Alex is going and enjoying the beach because you can do that in Texas or wherever he's going. That's the fun part about living in the South. Can't relate. Again, rate us 5 stars. Listen up on this. We really do appreciate you taking the time and just listening to two college kids talk about college basketball, right? Like, we don't know what we're talking about. We just act like we do. So for you guys to give us time of the day to act like you like what we're talking about, we appreciate that so much. And, you know, until next time, peace.